You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Donald Trump gave his first interview as president-elect to Leslie Stahl on CBS 60 Minutes. Speaking last night, Mr. Trump had this to say about what some of his supporters have reportedly been doing to minorities.
Do you want to say anything to those people?
I would say don't do it. That's terrible. Because I'm going to bring this country together.
They're harassing Latinos, Muslims.
I am so saddened to hear that. And I say stop it if it helps. I will say this, and I'll say it right to the camera, stop it.
With us now is Susan Reed, managing attorney at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Cindy.
Along with the other incidents that we kind of have talked about, have you heard of other incidents of harassment directly?
You know, we have. We are a statewide legal resource center for immigrant communities, and we work with a lot of bilingual attorneys and advocates in mutual aid organizations, service organizations that serve Latino, Arab, Muslim, and other immigrant-rich communities around the state. And I've received, I would say, dozens of emails from attorneys who say, you know, my client told me this, they don't want to report it, they don't want to tell anyone, but, you know, are you collecting information about this kind of incidents? There are civil rights organizations who track this kind of reporting that are saying that the numbers they're seeing are trending worse than 9/11, and that's consistent with our experience as well.
That was, I think, a question a lot of people have. Is this a true spike, or is it because we're hypersensitive and paying closer attention to something that maybe has been happening all along?
I feel very certain that it's a true spike. This is very different than anything we've seen before, and it's happening in ways and in places that we hadn't seen before. I certainly, from the anecdotes that I'm receiving, see a trend of emboldening of people who might have otherwise felt some stronger social pressure to be quiet.
If someone ends up in a situation where they're witnessing this kind of harassment or intimidation, what are some things that we can do?
Well, certainly, I mean, contacting the local police, if that's feasible. I mean, if you're in a public situation that's unsafe. Most large communities in Michigan currently have good police immigrant community trust, and there is a real need to obviously stop any threat of violence or harm that's happening while it's happening, and document and develop the record to really understand what's going on. But I also acknowledge what happened in Traverse City and the reality that not all local police are trusted, unfortunately, by immigrant communities. And so in a kind of after-the-fact reporting situation, I would want to urge bystanders and upstanders to be respectful and conscious of the different calculation that the most affected community may have about the value of involving the police or the potential harm associated with involving the police. The Michigan Department of Civil Rights has made a very strong statement, and in our experience, they're a trusted and independent institution established by our state constitution, and they can be reached at 1-800-482-3604.
Susan, President-elect Trump has said he plans to move quickly on immigration. He hasn't given us a lot of specifics, but we might expect him to target deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA, which was a presidential order from Mr. Obama. What effect do you expect this to have on people in Michigan?
Well, there are, you know, thousands of people in Michigan who have the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, work authorization, and temporary protection from deportation. I know and love many of them, and they will be tremendously exposed and vulnerable to deportation because, of course, they've given all of their personal information to the government and identified themselves. These are folks who've lived in the U.S. since they were at least 15 years old and have graduated from U.S. high schools. Many of them have now been in the workforce since 2012. You know, I really want to challenge our leaders who are saying that they're not about the hate to really prove it. Those who've said they're pro-immigrant and they support immigrants, what a great opportunity to step forward and be champions for those with the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. The governor often talks about how he wishes we stapled a green card to every college diploma to an international student that's issued. And abolishing the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program is like peeling a work authorization off someone's diploma. I really hope that champions will emerge on both sides of the aisle for people with DACA to protect those folks and stand with them.
Susan, last night on 60 Minutes, Mr. Trump said he's going to move quickly on deportations, particularly undocumented immigrants who he says have committed crimes. He said they'll be either deported or incarcerated. And he said that could be up to 3 million undocumented immigrants. And then said after the border is secure, immigration officials will start making a determination about the remaining undocumented immigrants in this country. But at the very same time, House Speaker Paul Ryan is saying there will not be deportation squads. What is your take on these messages? Are they conflicting?
It's hard to know, but I think something we almost certainly will see is a return to the kinds of workplace enforcement actions that we saw throughout the Bush administration and even early in the Obama administration. There already are deportation squads. They're called Fugitive Operations Teams of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They're incredibly visible in parts of Grand Rapids. They're incredibly visible in Southwest Detroit. There's a real disconnect there, right? Immigrant communities know that Fugitive Operations Teams comb their communities on a regular basis. So it's hard for me to make sense of a promise that there won't be deportation squads. There already are, and I would expect that there would be more, particularly because one of the first 100 days promises is to step back from a lot of the policies that have been put in place to make our current immigration enforcement system more humane. And many of those policies are really important in restraining the way that existing resources are used and existing laws are enforced. So it's not as though it would take some really radical action to see a return to the kind of worksite enforcements where a significant number of people are arrested at a particular place of business and by the end of the day are in a federal detention facility in another state.
And even so, all along, Mr. Trump has said he wants to do these deportations humanely.
Well, I guess I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, to me, someone going to work in the morning, saying goodbye to their kids, putting them on the bus, being detained at their job and, being in West Virginia or Arizona or Texas in a detention center when they go to bed and being removed from the country without seeing those children or that family again is not humane. But that's exactly what the system is set up to do. And only executive policies and practices have restrained that from being a very, very common scenario in the last 5 to 8 years. I don't know what humane means in that context. I truly don't. And I would love to be surprised, and I would love to see certain policies that are humane stay in place. I'll give you an example. Right now, there is a policy that if you are the sole caregiver of children and you are detained, for example, you're driving, you don't have a license, you're arrested, you're picked up by ICE. Right now, there is a policy that if you have a partner who you share custody with who could take care of those children, you'll stay detained and you'll go through the regular potential bond, or maybe you can't raise the bond, the sort of regular detention process. But if you are the sole caregiver of children, there's a policy, an executive policy in place that you'll be given an alternative to detention, maybe an ankle bracelet, maybe a bond, maybe even simply released pending your deportation court hearing. What I read in the first 100 days plan is that kind of policy goes away.
Susan, millions and millions of Americans were attracted to Mr. Trump's get tough message on immigration. They think that people who are here illegally are free riding on the backs of taxpayers, or that our insecure borders make us unsafe, and that there's a legal system and that it's not fair for people who violate our laws to stay in this country.
Well, for folks who can hear me say this, I want to say that our immigration system has always been designed to perpetuate white supremacy. That is what, in many ways, the rule of law in this country has always been about. And so to boil things down to follow the law or don't follow the law, when so many people have been excluded from the benefits of the law, excluded from the benefits of legal residency and citizenship, even as they were drawn to the U.S. by forces of supply and demand in our economy, even as our agricultural industry, our hospitality industries, just to highlight a few in this state, were enriched by their labor, I think is an oversimplification of the dynamic that's going on here. And I would invite people into deeper relationship with immigrant communities to understand those stories. There are lots of ways that people of goodwill with open hearts can learn more about these issues. All of our major faith communities have excellent resources to help people understand the need for truly humane immigration reform.
Is there a way to take those concerns into consideration, Susan, but and also have an immigration policy that you could support?
Sure. There is tremendously rich thinking about how to rebuild our immigration policy. And we've even reached compromises at a number of points in the last decade or so that were poised to bring immigration reform, just reform to the system to make it work better and decrease the incentive for people to migrate in irregular ways. But unfortunately, I mean, I hate to be too pessimistic, but I do feel like these election results represent a repudiation of that approach. And certainly some of the individuals named to the transition team would strongly repudiate those approaches. I would highlight a man named Chris Kobach. The Southern Poverty Law Center has followed his career extensively. His whole career has been built on a rejection of those approaches and a criminalization of immigration. And he's been named to the transition team. There's talk of involving former Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio in the administration in some formal way. I don't feel sanguine about this sort of being the moment to talk about immigration reform. Advocates in our communities are looking for champions, but are also thinking about resistance. And I do hope that there is opportunity for continued community building around issues of immigration. We run an initiative called Welcoming Michigan. I certainly would invite people who want to know what to do to take a look. We're going to get a list of resources up soon for people to think about how to build more community around these issues in their local contexts. To me, that's a fruitful place to put your energy. Other actions of solidarity with immigrants are fruitful places to put energy. I don't hear a lot of voices talking about how to get comprehensive immigration reform done in the next Congress or the new administration.
Susan Reed, managing attorney at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center. Susan, thanks for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy.